At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Biddle, here with the eventful voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, Matthew.
I'd say it's a slightly later good afternoon today, isn't it? Normally we record first thing in the morning to get this out for those eager to listen to it after the weekend's action. But a few delays, as there have been, in fact, over the past couple of weeks. We are a Between the Sticks late again, aren't we? We had a full show lined up last week, plus the Willy Caballero interview, plus the transfer special, which is going to be the most delayed transfer special in the history of transfer specials. It's like the antithesis of Sky Sports' breaking news.
We'll just include the summer window as well. We'll just wait until September and do it then, maybe. It was one of those weeks last week. I don't know if you want to tell the story about your meeting with Asmir Begovic that never was.
Yes, well, it was supposed to be with Asmir Begovic last week. Asmir's analysis, I think, is what we're going to call that Between the Sticks moving forward. And we were all geared up. It was perfect. The stage was set. Of course, Everton were in London playing against Arsenal. But unfortunately, just travel circumstances and a slight delay on the team coach meant that we weren't able to sync it. But hopefully, in due course, Asmir will be back on the pod and Between the Sticks will be out every week from now until the end of the season. Not always with you either.
Do you know what I quite enjoy about that story though? It's just the thought of you probably waiting at the team hotel, all excited to see Asmir, and everyone else in the hotel just looking at this poor guy sat at the bar on his own thinking he's been stood up.
To be fair, there was a game on, so I ended up watching one of the games on my laptop. I think it was an FA Cup game.
Yeah, you're living the dream. You really are. And then there was our, and we were meant to do a show as well, and of course then, we'll go into details there, but it was just one of those days. So yeah, we had one of those weeks last week, so a huge apology to all listeners.
But hey, we're back and back with a vengeance, and you, my friend, have been busy yet again, mixing in all those goalkeeping circles.
Trying to, yeah. There was an interesting event in Abu Dhabi that I went to, so leaders of sport. So it's actually been going for about 10-15 years now, I think, this event. So it's often held at Stamford Bridge in England, moving it all over the world now. And they're always quite interesting. A lot of football related people there. It is all sport, I must say that. Like, there was a talk from Tony Bellew, and there was actually a really interesting talk on the future of Saudi Arabian football, which, again, if their plans come to fruition, then that's certainly a league to keep an eye on over the next few years. They've got some huge plans to really develop football in Saudi Arabia. And then there was a couple of interesting talks, one from Alan Pardew and Roy Hodgson, where they gave a bit of a talk on leadership management. And then right at the very end of the second day, there was a talk from Carlo Cudicini, which was what I was interested in, and to be honest, the only reason I was there. So a talk from Carlo Cudicini, Sol Campbell and Mikel Silvestre. So I did that geeky thing where I don't know Mikel Silvestre, but I did make a point of going up to say hello to let him know that he scored past me.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was that guy. No. I was that guy. He had no idea who I was, of course. I shook his hand and I was like that geeky fan where I got all nervous and like, Mikel, you scored past me. That was pretty much all I had.
How did you explain it? How did the story go?
Well, he looked a bit confused, and then I started like almost trying to give him dates, you know, like, yeah, Vicarage Road, 2006. You cut him from the left, fired it in the far corner. I got fingertips to it, probably should have saved it. But so I tried to explain it, and then it kind of, in fairness, I think the fact that he didn't score many goals in his career, he did remember it quite quickly. And then I sort of used that as a bit of a way to start a conversation. But by that point, I mean, yeah, I could tell that any interest in his eyes had just gone. So yeah, it was a very short conversation.
I mean, I bet he really respected you after that moment. That was the way to earn his respect. If I had done anything like that, you would absolutely hammer me.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I was hammering myself afterwards. I was like, wow, what are you doing? What of all the things, I could have just said, hello, how are you? How are you enjoying the event? You know, I could have just gone with that line, but I thought the opening line made so much more sense to go in with that. And then maybe like we would have connected on some weird level, but we just didn't.
What was Carlo Cudicini like? Did you speak to him?
Yeah, I did speak to him. And actually, do you know what? No, really, really nice. So I saw him, and in fairness, he sort of, we clocked eyes. I mean, I'm making this sound a bit like a, it does sound like dating, doesn't it? You know,
clock eyes
from across the room.
He's a good looking man.
I didn't want to stand next to him. Didn't want to stand next to him for too long, if I'm honest. But we did. We clocked eyes from across the room, and we never actually played against. You always have that thought. I suppose, I'm sure a lot of footballers have this, where you see another footballer and it's like, well, of course I know you, but do you know me? And I was thinking maybe he would, because, you know, we did play against Chelsea a few times. Although I never played, I was on the bench a couple of times against them. When he was at Spurs, similarly, I was on the bench, I think, from memory. So I don't think I ever actually played against him. But I'm like, if you're Carlo Cudicini, would you remember that guy that was on the bench in a couple of games you played? But thankfully, we clocked eyes, and he came over straight away and said, hello, Rich, how you doing? Da, da, da. I think he said hello, Rich. In my mind, he said hello, Rich. But he definitely came and said hello, and then and I had a nice conversation. Really, really nice guy. He's still involved at Chelsea. So we had a bit of a chat about that and what he's doing now. He does get himself out to Dubai from time to time to play a little bit of golf. So that was interesting. That's about all I've got from that conversation.
Okay, well, it sounds good, mate. It sounds like you put yourself about. Did you ask Roy Hodgson why he decided to put Harry Kane on corners and free kicks in Euro 2016? Did that come up at all?
I mean, it didn't. That would have been what you'd have led with.
We need answers still for that. I played against Tony Bellew, in fact.
Oh, did you?
Once upon a time.
Okay.
Yeah, Goodison. Ever played at Goodison?
I've played against Everton. Do you want me to tell you that story?
Well, have you played at Goodison?
No.
Ah. It's all right, mate. Some people don't get to play at some of the top grounds in English football. That's fine. It's absolutely fine, mate. Don't worry about it.
Do you honestly, does that make you feel good? Do you feel like you've one-upped me there?
It's just a fact, isn't it? It's just a fact. Are you going to go to the event next year?
Well, that's the other thing I did. And I'll just be completely open and honest. So I found the event organizer. I did do that, and I went and had a good chat with him. And there's a really random link that we've got. And in fact, I'll mention this random link because it is very, very random. But it's one of the reasons I actually went in the first place, is that he knows my dad. Now, my dad's got nothing to do with football, but my dad had said this to me. You know when your old man tells you a story and you're a bit like, yeah, all right, dad, fine. But he, when Leaders has ever been going on, he always sort of says, oh, I really helped with that to get it going. I was like, okay, I never really considered it or questioned it. I was just like, okay, Dad, sure you did. Like, you've got nothing to do with football, nothing in the football world. So did you really have something to do with this event, which is now arguably the biggest football sports event that goes on? And that, like I say, they're all over the world now. But anyway, I went and saw, I thought, you know what, I'll just introduce myself and I'll just mention, oh, you know my dad. So I did that. That was my opening line to him. And then in fairness, straight away, he was like, oh, I've got so much to thank your dad for. When I was really trying to get this off the ground, I was looking to raise funds, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, oh, and your dad wrote me a check for £20,000 to sponsor me, which I thought was mental. Like, how's my dad? And then I said that to my dad. I was like, he told me you gave him 20 grand. He's like, did I? I was like, well, that's what you told me. Is that true or is that not true? And he was like, oh, so I think what it was, I think my dad, he was involved in quite a big company back in the day, and obviously they were doing these kind of sponsorships. So one of the sponsorships that company gave was obviously to this guy, and that then was part of the momentum that Leaders got. And credit to him, the guy's called Jimmy Worrell. He's a big Everton fan, actually, as it goes. But Jimmy Worrell, and he's, yeah, unbelievable job he's done. So then I spent the remainder of the conversation with him, convincing him that I should be up on stage with a couple of other goalkeeping people, because we could give a really interesting goalkeeping talk. So let's see if that progresses.
Oh, mate, amazing. So Goalkeepers Union podcast is up on stage, me, you, and one other next year. That's great to know.
No, do you know what I've done? And I've got a habit of doing this. I always forget to mention your name. So I've mentioned a few others that I think could be really, really interesting to have on stage. But yeah, just, it's weird. I get all like nervous or something. And I always forget Matt Beadle. Next time.
Well, great story, by the way. Great to hear what you've been up to. We've got plenty coming up. All the action from all four tiers of English football, a little bit more from beyond as well over in Europe. We are also going to just quickly touch on some of the key moments that we didn't speak about, of course, because we didn't do the Between the Sticks last week. So we're just going to touch on a few moments from last week because we feel like they are definitely worth a mention. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, starting in the Premier League at the Etihad, where Manchester City beat Newcastle by 2-0, and Edison has become the third fastest goalkeeper to reach 100 Premier League clean sheets. Thought we'd start on a positive because a great record, another record set by the Brazilian.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Well, not a record, sorry, a landmark.
A landmark, I was going to say, because he's third. I mean, he's won a bronze medal. I mean, let's certainly make a note of that. I thought you were going to question me on who one and two were. Now, I think I know one, which is Petr Cech,
Correct.
I was actually thinking that. I can't think of who the other is, and I really should know, shouldn't I?
I would say you should know, yeah. A strong Premier League goalkeeper. Won many a golden glove in his time.
Ooh, interesting. Joe Hart?
No.
He won a few golden gloves.
He did.
Okay, go on.
Pepe Reina.
Ah, yeah, I should have known that. Mm. Did he really? Is he second?
Yeah, so check in 180. Reina beat Edison by 10 games. 198. Edison did it in 208.
Wow. But no, still, look, phenomenal to do it in that many years. You know, we often talk about, I don't know, goalkeepers, as much as like you can play in a team that's not so good, keep playing well and not keep clean sheets, as we well know. But it is something that, despite all the stats that are out there and whatever else, you do pride yourself on clean sheets. You know, that idea of, can you do 1 in 3? Like, 1 in 3 is, for me, I think, deemed a top season. So the fact that he's essentially 1 in 2 over the course of a couple of hundred games is phenomenal.
So it's the second landmark to be reached in the space of 7 days or so. And in fact, the other one is indeed a record. And that was broken by David De Gea, who is now officially a Manchester United record holder for 181 clean sheets, the most kept in the history of the club. So we've got to give him a big round of applause for that. However, little more than a week later, he ships 7 in a game against Liverpool. Now, it's fair to say he wasn't really at fault for any of those goals, but I'd like to get your perspective on that, because we've also had an iMessage in. I mean, the clock is being thrown back here, an iMessage. Yeah, amazing, right? Okay. All the way from Perth in Australia. This is from Tom, who says, "Hey guys, big fan of the podcast. Would love to get your thoughts on something. As goalkeepers, is XG the worst thing that has ever happened to football? I've spent today arguing with some irate United fans who think Liverpool having 2.7 XG in the game yesterday is conclusive proof that De Gea was at fault for 4 goals. What are your thoughts on XG and this broader obsession with using statistics to measure and rank keepers? On a related note, one person even told me Alisson saves half of those. I asked him to explain the differences in technique, positioning and playing style between Alisson and David De Gea that make him say such a thing. He wasn't too happy about that."
Oh, I bet you didn't want to go into detail on that, no, because then that would actually involve some detailed analysis on why he might have made save. Look, do you know what, for me, it was one of those, and actually interestingly, now on the Sky Sports app, I see that they always give the XG above the scoreline or whatever it is, and I think yesterday, according to the XG, it should have been basically 3-1, 2.7 to pretty much 1. So Liverpool were the better team, of course, but it was just one of those days. The finishing was so clinical. Look, there's one or two that on another day, I think De Gea, certainly the couple on the angle, that he might be able to create a slightly better shape and makes a save. Even doing what he did, he might make those saves on another day. But look, I think we've all had it. It is it's the highs and lows of goalkeeping. You know, we spoke about De Gea really positively a lot recently, and certain things going his way, brilliant saves, etc. But I think we all have a day like that. We've all had a day like that, where you kind of come off the pitch and you've conceded a lot of goals and you think, there's not really a great deal that I've done wrong, but I'll still get a 3 in the paper or whatever it is because of the amount of goals that you've conceded. And I was watching that yesterday and you could sense it in the second half. Once it started to... Because let's be honest, before the first goal, there probably wasn't a huge deal in it. Certainly United, back end of the first half, you thought this is going to be a really, really good second half. But it's just so funny when like that second, third go in that... Then you've kind of got that decision. Like, so many teams at that point will just almost kill the game, decide we've lost the game. But you could just sense it was going to be one of those days. You know, it really did feel like that. And I know that's not necessarily detailed analysis on the game itself, but you could see it. You just felt there's so many more goals in this. And United, the general demeanour of the United team. So I actually just felt really, really sorry for De Gea. You know, and actually, arguably the one major mistake in the game was by Alisson, where he's miscontrolled the ball, it's got away from him, he's got away from it. No one thinks about that or talks about that. But if you're going to look at the goalkeeper's game individually, I'm sure Alisson, taking the scoreline out of it, will look back at that and be a bit frustrated with his contribution in that moment, whereas De Gea's probably looking back and there wasn't a great deal wrong in his performance. But look, it was just one of those days for me. They were very, very clinical. One or two small tweaks that no doubt he'd look to make moving forward. But yeah, it's very easy when a goalkeeper concedes 7. I heard the Roy Keane comments and whatever else. Like, it's all, you know, it is what it is. A lot of it is. And in fact, I know we're going to talk about Roy Keane again shortly, and I'll probably use the word. It's the equivalent of clickbait, isn't it, really? It's that, where it gets people talking. But no, I think it's one of those days, I think for United on the whole, but I think certainly for David De Gea, try not to think too much about it, move on. You know, it's what I'd say to a lot of the lads that I work with. You know, you're going to have a day like that every now and then. Now, the key is that you don't allow that to move on into the next game.
He kind of alluded to that in a tweet that he put out. And I know that we've spoken quite extensively about David De Gea and some of the messages that he's put on social media pretty much this season. It seems like he's much more vocal over social media this season. But just to get your thoughts on this, because I read this, I don't know whether it was this morning or last night, but I just felt like he didn't need to do it. And this is another issue, I suppose, with social media, and that players, or some players, believe that, oh, we've lost or we've won, it's our duty to put a message on social media. I don't really think it is their duty to do that. And he said, you know, I know this message doesn't sit well on such a day. It was a disastrous moment for us. Shouldn't happen. We have a duty to the club to represent the badge, but we have loads of opportunities to look ahead, basically. We have to lock our focus on these. He got lots of abuse in the comments. I only read a few because I'm not reading this. It's nonsense. But he got a lot of abuse as a result. And I feel like there's no need to invite that abuse onto you. Maybe he's not reading them. He's almost most definitely not reading them. But I just feel like some players feel like they have a responsibility to put these messages out when really they don't.
Well, I'd question how much of it is the players now, because in fact, this was part of the talk, or one of the talks that Leaders was talking about social media, the use of social media. And the majority now obviously do have media companies that will look after their social media, because the communication in moments like that are key, good or bad, you know, to maximize the positives and to try and minimize the negativity. So thing is, in terms of that message, it's one of them. And I know, you know, you look at it logically, in terms of the season they've had and are having, to have a trophy already and be in the position they're in, I'm sure a lot of United fans, most United fans, probably would have taken this at the start of the season. So he's right. It is one game. It is just, of course, it's the nature of it. It's then the understanding of the mentality of fans in that moment that, yeah, United fans will be hurting. Like, you know, of all things that could happen, to lose that heavily to your biggest rivals, it's a bad, bad moment. I don't know if there's anything you can post in that moment other than apologizing. Then even apologizing, again, this is another, bringing it back to goalkeeping, it's another thing, you know, should a goalkeeper apologize at half time when they've made a mistake? Like, I don't think so, because it happens. You know, it happens. You make a mistake in a game, a striker's apologizing when they miss a chance. Again, I don't think they should. The whole point is that you're giving everything you've got. And yeah, look, you take responsibility, of course, but should you then be apologizing? I don't think so.
Okay, we'll move on to the Emirates, where Arsenal scored a last-gasp winner against Bournemouth, 3-2 to the Gunners. And Aaron Ramsdale in the first half with what I'm going to call a save of the weekend contender from Dango Ouattara. Very good save, this.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, it's one of the best saves of the season, I'd say. Just look, it's one of them that there's a few things that are involved in this. The speed of feet, going from your near post to your far post, understanding the danger and what the likelihood is. And I just think he did it all very, very well. Spun quickly, moved so quickly, very brave, attacked the ball. And you look again, point of impact, the speed to actually get there first and foremost is very impressive. And the dive, the shape, the whatever you want to call it, at that point of impact is excellent. He gets close enough, makes himself as big as he can while diving, and he gives himself the best possible chance of making the save. Now, I know certain strikers will look at this and be like, oh, he's got to score. You know, he's got to do something a little bit different there. But as a goalkeeper, all you can do is control the controllables. And he's done that in this moment. The speed, the technique, the power, got himself into position. And it was a crucial save because it was 1-0. And I know they did go 2-0 down eventually anyway. But in that moment in the game as well, it was a huge save. Obviously gave them a lift. So no, huge credit to him. It's one of the best saves of the season, I think.
Mm. And euphoric celebrations at the end. It was great to see that. And great to see as well that Reece Nelson, who was incredibly calm after scoring in the 90 whatever minute it was, but Ramsdale was the first one to actually get hold of him. You saw the players trying to catch him, but Ramsdale got him in a good bear hug.
Yeah, I enjoy that. I like that when it's kind of a player manages to find their way through everyone and it's then the goalkeeper. That's the last man. And you get to, I've only ever had that once. I remember a last gasp equaliser against MK Dons. You probably remember it, knowing how much of a stato you are. But yeah, it was last gasp and Leon Legg. I remember he charged through everyone and then, yeah, pretty much knocked me over actually when he jumped on me. But yeah, no, I do enjoy that.
Everyone remembers that, mate. Leon Legg, old Leggy.
Leggy,
of course.
Yeah.
Everyone remembers that goal. Over to the Amex. Brighton 4, West Ham 0. A big talking point in this because Robert Sanchez was dropped by Brighton manager Roberto De Zerbi. This was the first time he'd been dropped since taking the gloves from Matty Ryan. That was in mid-December of 2020. Jason Steele in for his second Premier League appearance, and a big save from Steele from Jared Bowen, and that was at 1-0, big time in the game.
Yeah, credit to him to step in. Well, look, firstly, yeah, really, really surprised to see this. And as you say, it doesn't maybe get as much media focus as, you know, had it been at one of the big four, big six clubs or what have you. But yeah, really surprised by this. You know, if anything, there's obviously a lot of interest in Sanchez since he stepped in. He's done very, very well, very much a modern goalkeeper in many ways. I know there's been one or two moments recently, but certainly nothing overly alarming. So really surprised by this for a few different reasons. Certainly, it'll be interesting now, of course, Jason Steele, the fact he's stepped in, done very, very well. I know they really like him down there and certainly, you know, excellent distributor of the ball and made a big, big save, as you say. So no doubt he'll have a chance now, which is, yeah, fantastic for him. Because you look at, I suppose, again, you talk about careers and pathways and what have you, where, you know, it wasn't so long ago he had such a tough time at Sunderland. And now to have his chance in the Premier League, it's a really nice case study, I think, for most goalkeepers, you know, whether you're going through a tough time or not, to know that there are always routes that you can get there. So, no, huge well done to him. But yeah, I was surprised, really, really surprised, because it just felt like he, or it certainly seems like he's one of their biggest assets. He has been so good since he stepped in, and to see him dropped, it does make you wonder what might happen moving on into the summer, given that the certain goalkeepers that are talked about, and he's certainly always in that mix, and the fact that he's been taken out the team, and who knows, it could be for a number of games now, then no doubt that'll just intensify those conversations.
Yeah, it looks like Steele is set for a run in the side. De Zerbi came out afterwards and spoke about the decision. I'll just read out some of his quotes for you now. He said, "You have to be honest and clear, and Jason now is playing better than Robert. Robert is playing well, but Jason was fantastic in build-up, for example, in my style. Maybe he is closer than Robert to my style. But I think Robert can work to arrive at the same level. Okay, there are different characteristics, I understand. But Robert is a good guy, and I think he will want to improve in this aspect."
Yeah, I suppose it touches on what I've just mentioned there, that talk about the distribution, obviously the way that Brighton want to play. Maybe it's as simple as that. I mean, again, you've always got interesting situations like this, and this is probably me talking more from like an agency perspective, where, look, as much as football is very much you play the better goalkeeper for that particular style, that particular team, you've also got, and it'd be interesting how Brighton operate on this front, where if you do have assets, you'll sometimes see certain goalkeepers or certain players maybe being given a bit longer if they know that they are an asset to the team. And certainly that was probably more of the surprise for me, that he is such a big asset. There's so many rumours circulating about what might or might not happen in the summer. So you just kind of felt like he was one of the safest number ones in the Premier League. So to see him come out in that way, yeah, really surprising.
At the other end, a first Premier League start for Alphonse Areola, in 14 months as well. So Fabianski is now out with a fractured cheekbone and eye socket. Really awful injury for him. Although, if you remember, this was something that was flagged to us by Asmir last time Fabianski was taken off. So that's now a direct involvement in 15 substitutions for Lucas Fabianski, be that coming on, coming off, or due to a red card. So quite a phenomenal record. We'll have to get in touch with Opta to see if another goalkeeper has been involved in more, because I'm pretty sure they haven't. But yeah, a tough game for Areola, and a tough game for him in midweek as well. You said we were going to mention Roy Keane again, and this is the point that we're going to do it, because the equaliser for Manchester United in that FA Cup tie with West Ham, scored by the centre-back Aguerd, I think is how you pronounce it, was lambasted by Keane and aimed directly at Alphonse Areola for not coming out with violence, because a goalkeeper coach once upon a time told him to come out with violence.
Well, there you go. There you go. Thanks, Roy. No, look, it's a great ball in, first and foremost. This isn't, you know, and I use the word error, but this is an error that you see so often, because it's difficult. And this is the bit, again, that ex-outfield players, they won't fully appreciate this. When the ball's whipped in like that, to get to the highest point to be able to catch is very tough. It's such a flat ball in. It's a brilliant ball in. So to try and judge that in a split second, because you've got what? From the time that it's taken to when you're able to take the catch, second, 2 seconds? You know, it's not like it's clipped up in the air and you can just come and catch it. It's whipped in with pace. You want to come and affect it. The moment the ball dies on you just a bit, then you're then having to punch, or you're having to go over people. And it's as simple as that. Like, it's not a terrible, terrible error. Yes, could he have done something differently? Of course. I mean, in hindsight, if he stays on his line, he doesn't get blamed. You know, but the fact that he's tried to be proactive, tried to affect the game, unfortunately, he's not quite judged the flight of the ball. And like I say, we see it all the time. Someone gets in front of you, gets a head on it, and at that point, it becomes your fault. But again, there isn't that type of analysis. It's just the same thing. It's, and I use that word clickbait. Like, I feel like he said that because that's the exact quote that I've seen in so many stories in the last few days. Come with violence. Like, what does that even mean? Come with violence. Like, it's just nonsense. So, yeah, it annoys me. But again, it doesn't surprise me.
Okay, St. Mary's, Southampton 1, Leicester 0. Now, Danny Ward made a good penalty save from James Ward-Prowse, but he was then questioned for what ended up being the winner from Carlos Alcaraz. So Alan Smith said that it was too close to his body, and Danny Murphy on Match of the Day said that he'll be disappointed because the shot was from outside the area.
Again, look, right, will he be disappointed? Will he be disappointed? Maybe a little bit, but not for those reasons. You know, that's not what's happened. The reason he might be a little bit disappointed was just the, was a couple of things for me, was the distance that he was from, it's one of them in the end, he's almost caught in the middle, where if he had been a couple of yards deeper, then you know, you very much make it a shot from the edge and you're 2-3 yards off your line and then you look to make the save. Or if he takes another touch, he then looks to advance, turns it into a one-on-one, and at that point may look to spread, smother, whatever he does at that. Where he's almost caught in the middle. I think his weight ever so slightly is on his heels just a touch, hence why he's gone with his foot. Whereas I think had he had been maybe 2-3 yards deeper, body weight might have been forward at that point, and then he might have been able to get a dive away and get a hand to it. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's a good strike. It is a good strike. It's, no, it's not gone right in the corner, but again, it's a decent enough strike. But for me, it's just that. I think he's either more advanced, which I don't think would have been the right play here, but I think maybe just being a couple of yards deeper, body weight being forward, and then being able to try and get a hand to it, get yourself down as quick as you can, as opposed to going with the feet. Because I suppose that's the only bit. You see the moment it goes past him, when you are stretching with your feet, and I know we see David De Gea do it and a few others adopt this technique, I don't think you can reach quite as far as if you can collapse and get a hand down. So that would be it. But again, it's a small detail, but it's got nothing to do with it being outside the box, nothing really to do with it being close to his body. I just think it was ever so slightly a positional error. But then, as you say, at the same time, he makes a very good penalty save, which didn't really get the credit it deserved. Because you get the classic, what was it Alan Smith said on that? You know, we like to say it's a nice height for the goalie. Well, we don't really like to say that because, again, he has fired it right in the corner. He's hit it well. It's the fact that Danny Ward reads it very well, explodes to his right, moves quickly, and makes it look reasonably comfortable. But you know that if he dives the other way, then all of a sudden it becomes a great penalty. So, yeah, it's another one of those talking points which frustrate me. In fact, I'm already frustrated. Why do we do this podcast? I just end up getting annoyed.
Did you notice what happened with the goal scorer, by the way?
Go on.
Did a knee slide, didn't he?
Oh, that didn't work out well, did it?
Didn't. I've been saying it for years, and you've been mocking me for it. And there you go. Proof in the pudding. Don't knee slide.
Did he get injured?
Yes. Had to go off.
Did he really?
Yes, of course he did.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay, again, it's outfield stuff. I'm not that interested. But did he really? He went off.
Yeah. He tried to play on, okay, but went off, I think, in the second half. So, yeah, don't knee slide. So just one more to mention from the Premier League. Just a very quick mention. Chelsea 1, Leeds 0. But Ian Melier, nearly saving a point right at the death.
Well, it's interesting. We talked a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about goalkeepers coming up and whether they should or shouldn't. But this is another good example where it does cause a bit of chaos, and he has got on the end of it. Now, in the end, it wasn't the firmest header, it's fair to say. But the fact that he's there and he is a spare man, you know, if that drops a little bit lower, then he gets a foot to it, he probably scores. So, again, it's another proof for me that a goalkeeper coming up in the last minute, I would always encourage it, because I do think that more often than not, you give yourself a better chance of scoring a goal.
Okay, and a quick question for you, Richard. Mm. Do you know the goalkeeper who has faced the most shots, made the most saves, claimed the most crosses, made more touches and completed the most passes out of all the other top-flight goalkeepers in the current campaign?
David Raya.
Correct. Yes. Very good. Did you read the article too?
No, I didn't, but I just knew that.
Ah, okay, good. Well, he's obviously playing tonight in what some call the Richard Lee Derby. But we will...
does anyone? Do you call it that? Can you call it that? I'd appreciate that.
No, I don't think anybody would ever want to call it the Richard Lee Derby. But we'll quickly touch on last week. So I said we were going to, and I think there were two... We're going to refer to these as Save of the Fortnight contenders. And this was in the same game between Everton and Aston Villa, both from headers. Emi Martinez with a tip over from Amadou Onana, and Jordan Pickford reaching to keep out an Ollie Watkins header. Watkins called it a worldie. We'll start with Jordan Pickford because there's another story to him, as there is to Martinez as well. But Pickford has signed a new deal up until the summer of 2027. That takes him up to the age of 33.
Yeah, well, look, that was a fantastic save. We spoke earlier about the Aaron, very different saves, at the Aaron Ramsdale save and the Jordan Pickford save in terms of the execution, but the movement across the goal. you know, and it's why you do all those drills. And no doubt all you goalkeepers listening in, that one where you go from the near post into the middle to get set, and the speed at which you do it, it's so, so important. And Jordan Pickford epitomised this in this moment where you watch his movement. He's taken on that position, squared himself off for the small goal, but then as it then comes back in the middle, he gets across so quickly, perfect position, weight distribution spot on. Then he still manages to get another step into his left, explode to the top corner, and just about gets enough to get it onto the post. It's a brilliant, brilliant save. And the Emi Martinez save, very different again. This was power, reactions. This almost for me is, I use that term a lot, like vintage Martinez or vintage. This was vintage Martinez, you know, where the speed of reactions are just phenomenal. He's so powerful to get fingertips and put it over the bar. Brilliant, brilliant save.
He was, of course, named the best goalkeeper at the FIFA Best Awards as well a couple of weeks ago, joining Mary Earps for the women. She won the best goalkeeper too. Obviously starred for England at the Euros. Has had a bit of a rags-to-riches tale, really, now at Manchester United, doing very, very well. But Emi Martinez, yeah, great to see him pick up another award.
And again, another great story. You know, it wasn't so long ago that struggling to get into the Arsenal team, loan after loan after loan, kind of wondering when you get that little bit older whether you're going to get your chance in the Premier League. But not only that, he's now won a World Cup and he's the goalkeeper of the year. You know, and I just love stories like this, because I just think, again, to all those goalkeepers that kind of feel like it's not quite playing out as maybe they hoped it would, you just don't know what's around the corner.
And to finish, because I think we have to mention the fact that Loris Karius played for Newcastle in the Carabao Cup final last week. So much to talk about here from a mindset perspective, a performance perspective. What happens now for Loris Karius? I think it's fair to say that he did himself justice.
Yeah, I thought he did really well. I thought he did really well. Some big saves. I know he got a bit of stick for the goal, which, again, I thought was so harsh. Like, you know, you go for the initial ball, the deflection, to then be able to move your body in such a way to get a big enough hand on it to get it over the bar or wide is very, very difficult. So the fact that some were calling it an error without, again, any detail, but just calling it an error, I thought was incredibly harsh. But then I thought during the game, and even things like, you know, I saw on social media before the game, people were posting a clip of him fumbling a ball in the warm-up. So you kind of felt like the media, to an extent, wanted him to have a tough day. So the fact that he ended up playing what I thought was a very solid game on the whole. He looked composed, made a couple of really big saves, certainly towards the end of the second half in particular. So, no, I was really pleased for him because, yeah, look, for that to be your first game in front of English fans for however long since the Champions League final, played obviously a bit abroad, but hasn't played a competitive game for so long now. And suddenly to step in, you know, I can only imagine, and again, I'm sure goalkeepers listening in, like, you get nervous playing in any game. And, if, you know, imagine, and especially even more so, I know a lot of lads I speak to that the nerves almost seem to be that bit more when you haven't played a game for a while. So imagine not having played a game for so long and suddenly stepping into a game which was arguably Newcastle's biggest game for however long and having that sort of pressure on your shoulders. So for him to step up and do what he did, no, I wanted to give him a lot of credit.
Can I just ask you about the gloves that he was wearing as well? Because these also attracted quite a lot of attention. Now, I think I applaud Loris Karius for backing himself and not really caring about further attention being drawn to him. But part of me also felt like maybe it was something that he didn't need to do. Like, pick your battles in a way. Do you know what I mean? Wear gloves that are completely inoffensive, that no one's going to notice, and it's not a talking point. As it turns out, he did back himself and there wasn't too much attention to the gloves. But had he made a glaring error, or had there been something that could have been branded as his fault, the attention would have instantly gone to the gloves. And I just felt like maybe it was a choice that he didn't need to make. It wasn't the first time we've seen him wear them. He's worn them in training before. But you look into them, they're made by Popes, and they're actually started by a guy who he knows well back in Germany. But even the gloves themselves are called leather and chocolate. And I just felt like it was a fashion statement that maybe, I don't know, what do you think?
Well, no, do you know what? I quite like the fact that he wore them. I think that probably goes back to what we were talking about earlier about David De Gea's tweet, Instagram, whatever. Like, I think that when it comes to goalkeeping, probably not just goalkeeping, in fact, here you go, life in general, like, I think that we're often so concerned about what people think. Now, the truth is, if you're playing professional football at that level, you have to be so resilient. You have to be bulletproof, really, because, look, even Edison or Alisson, David De Gea, great example, he'll have had more hate on social media than anybody, I'm sure, over the years. And yet, you look at the career he's having, had, etc. So I think you almost need to get to the point where you just don't care. And you just do what you do for you. And I think that's what I applaud about this, in that, because there's been things previously that I've seen that have come out and I've had a similar feeling to what you've just mentioned there. I'm like, oh, is that the right message you want to send right now? I always remember he did some like weird advert soon after the Champions League final and I'm like, oh, that's not going to go down well. You know, so I think, look, it's good to have people around you to advise you, because I think they can then help, if that is important to you in that time, to make sure that you're either maximizing your publicity and maximizing the positivity, or again, if it is negative, trying to minimize it, play it down and come through it as quickly as you can. So I think it's good to have people around you to advise you to do that. But at the same time, I think the more you can get to that mentality, and I mention him a lot, but Ben Foster certainly had it when I was around him at Brad Friedel, when I was around him, where you don't really listen to the noise. You're doing it for you. You're doing it for the people close to you. You're doing it for your teammates, the manager, whoever it might be. But that's about it, you know, and you're not too, because I think the moment you start to worry too much about what the fans are saying, the fans are thinking, then it can really impact you. You know, any goalkeeper that, and I certainly stopped looking at social media. In fact, it was fans forums back then on the message boards. I certainly stopped looking at them quite young, because I realized initially it was all very, very positive, and yeah, boosts the ego and you feel good when you read a nice comment, but you soon realize after a while it soon turns. It doesn't matter who you are, it soon turns. So I think the quicker you can block out the noise and ignore a lot of that stuff and just be true to yourself, I think it certainly helps in the world of goalkeeping.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It is the EFL overview, where there are a series of Save of the Weekend / Fortnite contenders. We'll start in the Championship, of course. Chris Maxwell maintaining a clean sheet for Blackpool at home to runaway league leaders Burnley. Fingers to frustrate Johan Gudmundsson and a strong palm over the top from Scott Twine. In the Battle of the Johansons at the New York Stadium, Victor trumped Stefan with incredible reactions as Rotherham quashed QPR. Carl Darlow given the nod at Hull and showing his credentials in a home debut and win over West Brom. Freddie Woodman celebrating his 27th birthday. So happy birthday to you, Freddie, with yet another goalless draw for Preston. That is 9 goalless draws for the season now for PNE. And Cardiff's Ryan Allsop, a brave block in the first half and a top tip over in the second half against Bristol City. However, also a rather unfortunate red card, which saw him replaced by outfielder Perrien G. Every so often, you just don't mind seeing it.
Yeah, where do I start? So, yeah, firstly, Carl Darlow had to wait for his opportunity, which it's interesting when someone comes in on loan in January, you know, you often see, regardless of what's going on, they get put straight into the team. And I kind of felt that would happen with Carl Darlow, certainly someone of his, I suppose, calibre, his profile, etc. But credit to Hull, I guess, in that Matt Ingram has performed well this season. So they felt that he certainly deserved another game or two. And then finally, Carl Darlow given his chance. And it's fair to say that he, yeah, took it with both hands. I thought he was excellent in the game. I want to talk about the saves from Chris Maxwell, because I thought the save top right was brilliant. Again, we spoke a lot about good footwork and probably similarities to the Jordan Pickford one to an extent, where I thought to get that step in, to get up into the top right and save it the way he did, very good. The save from the free kick, similarly, made it look reasonably comfortable, but you know, it was struck with such pace. And the one from distance interested me because it's a top save. It's moving all over the place. But this was another one of those where, and Fraser Forster had a similar one at the weekend, where in Fraser Forster's case, the rebound was put in, where it's kind of one of them that you can't hold given the pace on the shot. You can't really get the angle on it to get it away. So you're just hopeful you can get enough power on the rebound so it goes far enough away from goal, and then it's classed as a good save. And I think Fraser Forster actually did that as well. But of course, they score the rebound. Then what happens? Everyone's questioning. I was watching Sky Sports News and I really wanted to see the footage, and everyone was sort of saying mistake, terrible error, blah blah blah, but I kind of feel it's one of them where that gets cleared, it goes down as a decent solid save, but the moment it goes in, it's classed as an error. In Chris Maxwell's case, in this, obviously it was cleared and topped off a fine performance. And the save from Johansson, brilliant save. In fact, what you said was exactly what I wrote down. The reactions are just incredible. Speed across the goal to then get a hand to it. Brilliant, brilliant save. Ryan Allsop, I thought, was top, and I thought he was incredibly unlucky with the red card. I'll start with the red card. I thought if you actually watch it again, ball's played over the top, and it almost bounces vertically. You know, it's one of them that you'd have expected it to kick on a little bit more, it doesn't. Then after that point, you're expecting the defender just to shield it because he can see Ryan Allsop come charging out to clear it. And he decides to head it back to him. And then even then, kind of hits him in the chest and then the hand. There's no intention to handball it. And before you know it, it's a red card. So I felt really sorry for him on that one. But certainly a brilliant, couple of brilliant saves in the game. The one I thought was really brave. And we've all had a few of these moments where the ball breaks 6-7 yards out. And you know you've just got to charge towards the ball. And the goalkeepers that don't, they'll get beaten in this situation. The goalkeepers that put their neck on the line, put their health on the line, certainly in this case, and he got the rewards. He got there really quickly. I think he took it square in the face, I think. But yeah, excellent save.
Four of the best in League One. Will Norris with another absolute worldie. Maybe. Now, this happened last time out where a touch wasn't conclusive, but we're going to give it to him nonetheless. However, it did come in a late defeat at Sheffield Wednesday. Marco Morosi defying Derby, and in particular Lewis Dobbin as Shrewsbury fought back to bag a draw against Derby. And Carl Rushworth adding to what is rapidly becoming a bulging scrapbook of super saves. This one match-winning from Gatlin Odonker as Lincoln held out to beat managerless Oxford.
Yeah, I love the Carl Rushworth one because it's low down to his right. And it's one of them where, again, not quite able to get the angle to get it around the post. And it kind of loops up in the air, and it's that lovely moment where it just drops into his hands. But great reaction, powerful to get down low to his right in the way that he did. Top, top save. Thought the Marco Morosi save was fantastic as well. Last minute of the game. To make a save like that, there's not many moments in your career where, you get the opportunity to do that because, of course, goalkeeping, you've got to wait for it to come to you. You can't force something like that. But to get the opportunity to do that and to execute it in the way that he did, moved across the goal but didn't allow his weight to be too far to his right-hand side as he moved across to the right, got himself set in a really good position, powered back to the left, good angle on the parry, top, top save. And as you mentioned, another top save from Will Norris, good tip onto the bar and certainly making a bit of a name for himself at Peterborough.
Well, you might have noticed, Richard, I did say four of the best from League One and you've just commented on
you
three. I have. That is because, Richard, we've got one of these. You know what that means, don't you?
We haven't had one for a while, so you might have to jog my memory.
It's Text Talk. It's back.
Ah, excellent.
So, James Belshaw, who's been back in for Ellery Balcombe at Bristol Rovers, pedalled back and made a fantastic save in the goalless draw between Bristol Rovers and Barnsley. And I'm delighted to say he's given us his review and verdict on the save. Would you like to hear it?
It's a bit of a surprise, Matthew. I had no idea that you'd gone direct to James. I'm impressed, but at the same time, I kind of feel like this is a little bit sneaky.
So, sorry, mate. To quote Richard Lee, I forgot to mention you. I'm sorry.
Nice. No, well, look, I am actually really impressed and I'm really looking forward to hearing this.
Okay, here it is.
Hi, everyone. It's James Belshaw here from Bristol Rovers. Just been asked to talk you through my save from the weekend against Barnsley. So setting up for a corner defensively, I mean, I'm getting pinned in and their lads put some unbelievable balls in all game. Left foot has like whipped on top of me. So it's one of them flat ones where you're hoping your defender gets a touch on it, but you're trying to sort of affect it. So I've tried to get a punch on it and then defenders headed it up in the air. And at that point, my eyes are just fixed on the ball. So you're looking up and I actually get myself into a bit of a pickle here because I'm focused on the ball, so I can't see the traffic in front of me. And then I'm just trying to throw a punch over the bodies, but I can't get near the ball. And after that point, there's just it's a bit of pinball. So I'm trying to get eyes on it. So my set position is actually still a little bit high because I haven't got the time to drop. So I'm trying to just get eyes on the ball, trying to look through, see what I can sort of get anything on it. But it sort of flicks up to one of their lads who I think is just getting up off the floor. And as he gets off the floor, he's flicked a header towards goal and I've seen him sort of get up, get towards the ball. So as that's happened, I just had to drop as quick as I can and sort of managed to dive backwards and it's gone over our defender's head and I've just got a left hand on it and got it over the bar at the last minute. So I think I've got myself in a bit of a pickle, like I said, trying to affect the cross. Maybe I should have stayed at home, but after that point, it's just about remaining focused and sort of regaining composure and trying to get into a good enough set position to make the save.
Love it. Love it. And do you know what? He says he gets himself into a pickle. Actually, so I've watched this a few times and it reminded me a bit of where, once the ball breaks, it reminded me a bit of where you've got like a, you know, that one, we haven't seen one for a little while actually, like a free kick given 7 yards out for a pass back or something. And then you almost see, ordinarily you'll see the goalkeeper stood in front of the wall and try and charge it or do whatever. Because it kind of almost turned into one of those situations where there were so many people there that actually I quite liked his position, because I think he was just waiting for it. If it broke anywhere near him, he could have pounced. And we talked about the Ryan Allsop save, kind of similar to that, where he could have then taken that step forward and looked to block it at source. But it was then the speed, the moment it loops up into the air, the speed at which he gets back and the improvisation to make the save is first class. And look, huge credit to him, because again, we spoke earlier about Sanchez getting dropped, and at League One level, this was kind of a similar story when this happened, because by all accounts, he was having a top season, then all of a sudden, he's taken out the team. So it was very surprising to see him come out of the team. So to step back in and make a save like this, it's kind of, you have one of those standout moments in a game like this. It's the kind of moment that, you know, fans, managers, teammates, etc. remember. So look, I was delighted for him. It's a top, top save. And certainly when you haven't played for a couple of weeks or whatever it's been now, a few weeks, to come in and produce like that is fantastic.
Yeah, great stuff. And delighted to see Text Talk back. Of course, if you are a goalkeeper that would like to feature on Text Talk, it's very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or just send us a WhatsApp 07503673020, and your voice could be on this very podcast. Okay, moving on to League.
Or alternatively, you might just get Matt Beadle sliding into your DMs.
I don't know why you have to say it in that voice. Moving on to League Two, where there were two top stops from Jonathan Mitchell. Ryan Rydell and Carl Wootton kept out in another blank between Stockport and Doncaster. Tough to keep up with the hokey cokey keepers at Newport too. Joe Day back in and saving superbly from Salford's Louis Barry. Alas, Newport went down 3-1 at the Peninsula. And not so tough to keep on tabs on Paul Farman's heroics at Barrow. Another man of the match performance from him. Another 1-0 for the Bluebirds. And that's largely thanks to Farman expertly tipping over from Walsall's Taylor Allen.
Yeah, again, we spoke about the Martinez save earlier. Similarities here, the speed of reaction to make the tip over. Top save. Joe Day, excellent reactions as mentioned. And Johnny Mitchell, the save to the top right, it was. I really enjoyed this. Cause it was one of those as well. It almost jammed into the triangle, you know, in the top corner of the goal. And again, it was just the perfect save, certainly from where he was. He couldn't get it round the post. So to be able to get it up into the top corner and to then bounce back out from the post, just a top save.
Good stuff. We should also, because we weren't able to comment on this last week, just flag one of the top saves of the season so far as well from James Beadle, who's on loan at Crewe from Brighton. And only his second professional performance, arguably one of the strongest opening 5 minutes you'll see a goalkeeper have.
Ever. I watched this game live and it was just incredible. I think he made 4 saves in the first 5 minutes and 2 that were just outstanding. And for those that don't know too much about James Beadle, I mean, he's 2 meters tall, just over 2 meters tall, distribution fantastic, unbelievable mentality. Progressed at Charlton, moved to Brighton, now has his loan to Crewe. And yeah, they've thrown him in and he's played 3 games now. And it's a nice one personally, because you talk to so many clubs and there's this catch 22 when it comes to young goalkeepers. And until they played a few games, there's always a question mark. Oh, can they handle men's football? And it doesn't matter what footage you might show certain clubs, there's still this question mark, and so many want that experienced goalkeeper and what have you. So for him to get this opportunity so young and to have shown that he's got the mentality to be able to deal with it, and again, it's only 3 games in, but certainly 3 really impressive performances. And this game in particular, like I say, that first 5 minutes, the save that he made with his top hand was everything that he's about. The speed of movement, the reach that he's got, the power that he's got to get a top hand to it. It is a truly world-class save. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it's that time in the show when I'm made to look like a bit of an idiot. And we start in the Premier League. Edison, Tun, Emi Martinez, FIFA's number one. Jason Steele, Prem account opened. Kepa Arrizabalaga, Todo Bien. Jose Sarr, Todo Bem. Gavin Bazunu, 2 and 3. Alisson, sound the siren. 5 in a row. Into the Championship, Ainsley Pears, Pomatius, Ryan Allsop of the Pops, Chris Maxwell not running dry one bit. Aura Murich, top of the pitch. Ben Wilson, stacking. Ethan Horvath, ever present. Zach Steffen, star and strike. Dan Backman, back on track. Freddie Woodman, 3 from 4, goalless. Into League One, Connor Ripley, martial art of goalkeeping. James Trafford, big hands. James Belshaw, back in for Balcombe. Harry Isted, unbeaten Tyke. Matt Macy, hat-trick. Luke Southwood, 6 to midnight. Christian Walton, one more for the siren to roar. Carl Rushworth, a lot very soon. Callum Burton, haberflashery. Aidan Stone, can't moan. Cam Dawson, absolutely 9. And finally, League Two. Harry Lewis, every game, all the time. Thomas Holy, he'll decide whether it's off or it's on or off or on. Mark Oxley, threesy peasy. Glenn Morris, 39-39, not depleted. Lee Burge, reclaiming the throne. Richard O'Donnell, tricky dicky. Ben Hinchcliffe, 2-4-6-8, never too late. Jonathan Mitchell, night at the Vic. Paul Farman, 3 of 4.
Expertly done, Richard. Expertly done.
Thank you. I mean, again, I've got no idea what a lot of those references are, but I'm sure you do, and I'm sure you enjoyed them. So, well done you.
A whopping 36 clean sheets this weekend.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
Feels like we're getting more and more every week.
It does, which, when it comes to clean sheet club, as much as I want goalkeepers to keep them, that's the part of the show that I dread.
Would you like to hear the table, just quickly?
I would love to hear the table.
Top of the pile is still Lawrence Vigouroux on 20 in 35 games. In second place is James Trafford with 18 on 36 games. And in third spot, Ben Wilson with 17 in 32. It is the most clean sheets in the Championship. A great season for him. But that is the top three. It's very close.
Can Trafford chase Vigouroux down? What do you think? Good old Trafford, eh?
Very good. Very good, Richard. I'll actually give you that. Well done. I'll give you one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just before we go, a quick mention to Sam Howes, Magnus Norman and Harrison Mayle, who have been called up to the latest England C squad. Magnus Norman, by the way, I was looking at his stats. He's at Oldham now, of course, spent some time with Carlisle, now very much the Oldham goalkeeper. He has saved 9 of the last 14 penalties he's faced. That is over the course of about 5 years or so, 5 or 6 years. But 9 of his last 14, what a record.
That is ridiculous. That really is. That's kind of one of those where you feel like, okay, do you then take him to a major tournament to be that guy, you know, to bring on? I know a lot of people always talk about that as an idea. I don't like the idea, by the way, because I think a goalkeeper that's played 120 minutes and kept a clean sheet and is ready for their moment of fame, their moment to be a hero, and then to suddenly have someone come on, I hate that. But actually, that's that kind of record where you're like, there's got to be a little bit more to it than just, you know, it's just a coincidence. Like, 9 in 14 is incredible.
And just finishing on a tweet that we've had in from a gentleman named Ian Longstaff. He was watching Sky Sports News, I think, who were showing the goals from the Borussia Dortmund RB Leipzig game just gone. And he says they're talking absolute rubbish about the second Dortmund goal. Not the best goalkeeping you'll see this weekend. Look at the amount of bodies the ball comes through and the deflection before him. You try stopping it. The goalkeeper in question was Janis Blažić, the Leipzig goalkeeper.
Yeah, and this is, again, it's another example for those who haven't seen it. It's a shot from distance, but effectively, as far as he's concerned, it's a shot from 5 yards, 6 yards, because he doesn't see the ball, deflection, the speed, picks up a bit of pace. So although it looks bad, if there's nobody in front of him, yes, this is a very simple save. But the moment you've got people in front of him, it changes the whole dynamic. It's effectively a powerful shot from 6 yards that he's got a hand to, but not quite enough to keep it out. Yeah, no mistake here. As you say, look, can it be saved? Of course, there might be goalkeepers out there that make the save. But this, for me, is one of those where if it's saved, it's a worldie.
Lovely stuff. I have got one more email I'm going to read to you, Richard, to just go out on a bit of a high. You might appreciate this.
Go on.
So this was sent in to us by Dan Brooks, who says, as a Sunday League goalkeeper, this podcast is so cathartic. I've just listened to a brilliant Rob Green interview, and now I'm loving a discussion on idiot outfield players calling keepers. Drives me crazy. You're doing an awesome service for every single keeper. Please don't stop. Isn't that nice?
No, that's really nice. It's really nice. Is that from one of your friends, or is that from a genuine listener? Is that from a family member, Matthew?
That is from a genuine listener who's also said something about Gary Neville, which I won't read out because It's a bit of an expletive. And we try not to do that on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. But please don't stop you, Richard, okay? Don't you stop.
Don't stop getting annoyed when I do this. But no, we are very PG. We are. I mean, we could maybe do like an X-rated version of the goalkeeper. That might be our next step. Who knows?
And I would say, if you haven't listened to the Rob Green interview yet, we put that out last week. It was one that we actually did a year and a half ago or so, but we're filtering through some of those old Patreon podcasts. So give that a listen. There will be another one as well, which is the third installment of Rob Green. He's a really good storyteller, tells some really good stories, a nice insight into his career, both on a domestic and international level. But Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.